labor. They could also serve as a vigilante for inspectors grade restaurant sanitation and building inspectors grade building quality in the same way.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Tobin on TRA. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Tobin.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Tobin. Dr. Tobin is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Tobin is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Tobin is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Tobin with Christian Worldview.
Just ending our third week now on the Tyranny Response Network and Christian Worldview today with Dr. John Tobin. Welcome to the show. Glad you joined us here this morning. As has been our tradition all week, we've been reading a quotation from, or two from P.J. O'Rourke every morning. And today is a very simple quip that says, you can't get rid of poverty by giving people money. And he also says the Middle Eastern states aren't nations, they're quarrels with borders, which is, I suppose, somewhat interesting. At any rate, we have an interesting show coming up today. We're glad you're here to join us on the Tyranny Response Network. You're welcome to give us a call this morning at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also send your comments and questions to us by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And we'll be happy to read those questions on the air and discuss them as we did yesterday. We had just an avalanche of very good thought-provoking questions yesterday from listeners, and we appreciate that. Well, a couple of news items in the hitting the headlines this morning and yesterday of interest. One on Fox News says, world leaders mark Auschwitz liberation, and they say in Krakow, Poland, world leaders gathered in Poland, the European Union lawmakers observed that a minute of silence in Brussels and a Holocaust survivor warned German leaders to be vigilant against anti-Semitism in ceremonies Thursday to mark the 60th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp. In Poland, where leaders from 30 countries gathered to remember the victims of the Holocaust, Vice President Dick Cheney noted that it did not happen in some far-off place, but in the heart of the civilized world. The story of the camp shows that evil is real and must be called by its name and must be confronted, he said. Major Anatoly Shapiro, 92, who commanded the unit that captured the camp on January 27, 1945, greeted leaders and survivors of the Holocaust forum in Krakow ahead of the main ceremony in the Auschwitz and Birkenau camps. And it goes on to talk about what, you know, actually happened in Auschwitz. The original figures, right in 1945, were that 4 million Jewish people were incinerated after they were gassed to death at this camp. Later on, this figure became completely unsupportable, and the plaque apparently that said 4 million people were killed here or Jews were killed here has been removed. The estimate was then revised downward to 1.5 million. Well, since then, apparently, there have been further revisions to the revisionist history or what was thought to be the number of people killed. The Fox News story does report that 1.5 million people, most of them Jews, it says here, lost their lives at the camp. However, there are some people that believe that number might even be lower. Now, not being a historian or certainly doing any research, I can't say for sure, but all I can tell you is that people out there are claiming that far fewer Jewish people were actually killed at this camp. And even this number 6 million might really be inflated as well. It might be closer to only 2 million Jews that were killed during the war. And I say only, I mean, still 2 million is a pretty huge number. But for those of us who, like us on the Tyranny Response Network, that tend to take interest in counting up just how much evil government does or the state does, It becomes rather important as a historical fact. Stalin was probably killed anywhere from 40 to 80 million people himself, and he's still the world's greatest mass murderer. But Adolf Hitler was thought of as being one of the world's greatest mass murderers as well, and just right behind Stalin. Well, reducing his numbers would bring him down in the hall of evil a little bit, if you just quantify evil by the number of people actually slaughtered by these thugs. At any rate, this is of interest to me, not only because of because we like to follow up on the history of Hitler and his regime and his repressions and oppressions and murder, but because it's interesting to talk about history and how it gets revised by people for political purposes. So if you happen to know anything about the Auschwitz numbers and would like to comment on it, we'd appreciate your phone calls to 864-201-6955. Educate me a little bit, 864-201-6955. Somebody sent me an email the other day that tipped me off to an article that was posted on the Internet. And of course, you can't always believe everything that's on the Internet, but it seemed to be fairly well-researched by someone who had just written a book regarding the Auschwitz numbers, and it seems like he thought pretty clearly that the numbers were inflated dramatically and could have been as low as 100,000 or some such number. Jews that were killed there. He also mentioned that there might be that many other people, non-Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, and other people who were killed in Auschwitz that we don't normally hear about, which I also found to be quite interesting. So if you have a comment or a question about that, please don't hesitate to call the show, 864-201-6955. Questions and comments can also be sent by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, moving on to perhaps another story that relates to the Christian worldview to some, at least to some extent. And why does Auschwitz relate to the Christian worldview? Well, just in case you didn't notice, first of all, murder is a bad deal, and killing people that are innocent is a bad deal, and that from a Christian worldview point of view, at any rate. Another issue is that the Christian worldview has really not grappled with the issue of the state as far as the circles of evangelicals that are available today. And when we start counting up bodies of people killed and the way they were killed and why they were killed and the philosophy behind it all, it is important for us to know about from a Christian worldview perspective. We need to be able to assimilate the data like that and make judgments on whether or not what had happened, what the state's actions had done, what the public policy of the day was, and how it was utilized, whether or not that squares with the Christian worldview and what the Christian's response should be to it. Obviously, if I knew somebody was going to carry off people today and put them into death camps like Auschwitz, I would feel compelled to disobey the state's edicts that I would turn over people that could be victims there. I even believe it's okay to lie to state agents if they come over to ransack someone and his home and then take him away and kill him. Other Christians don't agree with me on this issue. They believe that they have an obligation to just zip their lip and be quiet, let the intruders come in, and I'll just let the chips where they fall may they you know fall where they will, and I'm going to be quiet about it all. And if they find them, well, that's God's providence. And if they don't, great, praise the Lord. I'm going to just keep quiet and pray. Another choice is that you have to obey. That's one of those ordinances of men that just have to be obeyed. And if they come looking for the Jews or someone else to kill, you just got to say, yeah, sure, I got a few here. You want to take them off with you? And, sorrowfully hand them over maybe, but still not definitely not lie. Well, I think there is a time whenever you have someone who is a common criminal or a thug trying to harm you that you have the opportunity to deceive him, just as you would in warfare. You have to have deception in warfare. That's just part of the way it works. And if someone comes into my home to rob my family and, say they go and beat up my first son and he's bloody on the floor and they're going to, come after, me next and that's fine. So they come after me and take me on and I'm down. He's got a gun to my head and he says, now where's your wife? I'm going to go and rape her, and if I know she's hiding in the closet, I'm going to say she's not home. Now, maybe some of you would say, well, she's hiding in the closet. Go ahead and get her. And maybe some of you would just say, no, God in his providence wouldn't allow that. Or, well, maybe you could stick your head in the sand too, fellas. But I don't know what those people believe that actually say it's okay to just tell criminals what's actually going on. Now, the real rub comes, of course, when in the Christian worldview, when we start considering the whole issue of criminalism. See, some people believe, who are Christians, that the state is not a criminal by virtue of the fact that God ordains it. It's up there. It's elected. It's in part of our popular part of the representative government that we have today, and therefore they can't be a criminal class no matter what they do, and therefore you can never treat them like criminals. You could never lie to the state like you might be able to an intruder or robber or other thug. Well, I don't agree. I think that states can be very criminal in their activity, and they have been, and show themselves continually to be criminal in their behavior, and that you can treat them as such at all times. You may disagree with me, and I'd be happy to hear from you if that's the case, and we can discuss it on the air. 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, especially if you have more information on this Auschwitz death camp and the true numbers or the number of people killed there. We also have another story in the news here, somewhat grotesque, but again very telling, I think, of what goes on with the Bush administration, the way it conducts wars and so forth. The Associated Press reporting on January 27th in San Juan, Puerto Rico, female interrogators tried to break Muslim detainees at the U.S. prison camp in Guantanamo Bay by sexual touching, wearing a miniskirt and thong underwear, and in one case smearing a Saudi man's face with fake menstrual blood, according to an insider's written account. A draft manuscript obtained by the Associated Press is classified as secret pending a Pentagon review for a planned book that details ways the U.S. military used women as part of a tougher physical and psychological interrogation tactics to get terror suspects to talk. It is the most revealing account so far of interrogations of the secretive detention camp, where officials say they have halted some controversial techniques. Folks, all I can say is, this is wickedness. You cannot conduct or say you're conducting a just war and then behave in a sinful manner like this and try to entice men sexually, entice them to sin like this, if this is indeed happening, and call yourself just or a Christian. And just like Abraham Lincoln tried to distance himself from the terrible punitive acts of Sherman and Butler, with Butler's right to rape order in New Orleans, and Sherman the way he just devastated the South and his cruelty, there is no way that Bush can, he's going to try to do the same thing and hide like Lincoln did and not be right in the front and directly responsible for this kind of activity. But he is the commander-in-chief, folks, and this is the kind of war that he's allowing to be waged, and let's not forget it. This is not your guy. If you've been duped into believing George Bush is your man, the Tyranny Response Network is going to help disabuse you of your misconceptions about him. We're coming up on a short break. This is the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN. Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Now we have Reflector.com, the Daily Reflector, a rather obscure, perhaps, newspaper, but it has a story in here that's interesting. It also claims it's getting this information largely from the Associated Press. And this headline says, North Dakota to ban ownership of poisonous snakes. In Bismarck, North Carolina, or North Dakota, North Dakota's House has agreed to ban private ownership of poisonous snakes, responding to an incident in which two Bismarck men ordered deadly reptiles over the internet and then showed them off. Representative Dwight Rangum, who is a Republican from Bismarck, said the legislation permits someone to keep a poisonous snake only if he or she has a permit from the state veterinarian, intends to use the reptile for education, and has the ability to handle and care for it. Last July, police found four deadly snakes in a Bismarck apartment Andrew Greff and Doug Feist were charged with a misdemeanor, reckless endangerment. The men told authorities they felt safe with the snakes because they lived near a hospital where they could go if they were bitten. Representatives chuckled when Rangum described the reasons for the bill, which is approved 88-0 on Wednesday, and if it now goes to the Senate for additional review. These individuals had taken these snakes to at least one school under the false premise of getting them identified. They knew what they were, they just took them so they had an excuse to show people what they had. After the snake incident, Greff lost his left arm in a pipe bomb explosion. Well, how interesting. Okay, that's not part of the Christian worldview, although some think that it is, to handle poisonous snakes. I don't know what poisonous snakes they got, if it was a rattlesnake or if it was a cobra or something really deadly from Australia. But whatever kind of snake it was, these people are making abuses of out of them, obviously, and probably being foolish. Anybody who has also loses his arm by building and exploding pipe bombs obviously has some twisted ideas about life in many regards. But at any rate, without trying to judge or impugn this man's character, all we can say is this about the state's policy. The state does not need to actually step in and do this. This man can be charged with a crime. The deterrent effect of charging the man with the crime, killing these snakes. I really hope they don't keep these snakes. And I'm just not one that thinks we need to have poisonous snakes. And I'll tell you more about that in just a minute. But at any rate, I know you environmentalists out there who think that we lose one species, the whole world's going to go down the drain. You cringe when I say things like that, but I tell you what, folks, the world will not end until Christ returns, until God wants it to end, and if we got rid of every mosquito and every poisonous snake, it wouldn't bother me one bit, including poisonous spiders in that category as well. Well, at any rate, there's no need to enact a proactive public policy. Remember, proactive public policies are those aimed at redistribution of wealth or at changing our behavior. You know, and then the changing of the behavior ones would be helmet laws, they'd be seatbelt laws, they'd be regulations on when you can drive or can't drive, especially if they think there's a gasoline shortage or some other myth. At any rate, in this case, we have government trying to tell us what we can and can't do with owning snakes and so forth, and they believe they need to have proactive legislation in order to deal with it. Well, it's simply not true. I mean, this is overkill. This is going way too far, and although I don't like poisonous snakes, this just isn't the way to deal with it properly, as far as I'm concerned. There's a way to deal with it under the common law, and it does not need to be legislated in a proactive sense. I remember a study a number of years ago in Louisiana. If you've been to Louisiana or Arkansas and driving around, you notice lots of armadillo, turtles, and other things cross the road. And you find lots of dead armadillos have been struck on the road. A couple of researchers, I think it was in the University of, maybe it was Louisiana State University, went out with some rubber turtles and rubber snakes. And they would throw one of these turtles on the road, for instance, or a couple of these turtles, and they would observe people's behavior, and they'd sit there off the side of the road with a camera or we're just recording it and find out that, you know, people would swerve, that they'd count, 1,000 cars going by, and people would go out of their way not to hit the turtle. And I think no one ever did hit the turtle. But then they threw up the snake on the road. It must have looked pretty real. And people went out of their way to hit it. They not only went out of their way to hit it, they stopped and backed up and ran over it 2, 3, 4 times and then continued on their way. They said that even one person got out of his car, opened his trunk, pulled out a shotgun, and went over and blasted the thing to death, the rubber snake. So people have, I think, share the tyranny response unit's view, if I remember that study correctly, that they don't really care for poisonous snakes too much. They think turtles are cute and they have some use for that, but anything that can kill you, like a poisonous snake, they just don't have the heart to really endear themselves to the beast. Well, at any rate, North Dakota legislature needing something to do, going far beyond what they needed to do by this proactive public policy. But one of our producers gave me an email that was sent to him regarding a young man's great concerns over President George W. Bush. Now, for those of you who have not been listening to the Tyranny Response Network for a long time, you may not realize that we are greatly disturbed by the actions of President George W. Bush. George W. Bush has been sold as the friend of the Christian, as a friend of the religious right, as someone who's going to actually help restore America to its traditional values and roots in terms of liberty, morality, and so forth. And we just don't buy it. We think George Bush is a shifty politician who uses the language that is necessary to get stirred up the gullible Christian right to vote for him and get him into office. He's a shrewd political maneuverer who has gained victory at the expense of the American people and expense of the Christian right especially. And here, this particular man has some concerns. First of all, he was listening to the speech on Bush's inauguration, and he quoted Abraham Lincoln. And he quoted Abraham Lincoln, and the man says, "This is forgivable because he has been blinded, that is Bush, by revisionist history like many other well-meaning Americans. Some people in my own family think that Abe Lincoln was a good guy." So he says he can forgive that. Well, you're more forgiving than I am. As far as I'm concerned, if someone's going to be president of the United States, he has no permission to be ignorant of something so atrocious that has happened in our country here. He needs to know about Lincoln, and if he doesn't, then he's disqualified. It's just got to be something he's got to learn. You got to learn how to read, you got to learn how to write, and if you're going to be president, you got to know about the other presidents who've gone before you. And if you think Abraham Lincoln was good, then it really brings makes us doubt the character of GW as well. So I'd go further than this particular fellow who wrote the email. Adam, I believe his name is. Secondly, he said he praised the soldiers who fought for the Union, that is the North, under Lincoln. Again, this is forgivable, says Adam, for the above reason, and because his current job description is to be the President of the United States, not the Confederate States. However, his native state of Texas should be horrified that he exalts the very soldiers who fought against them. And the people of Texas should be horrified, as well as everyone else in the United States who loves liberty, who loves peace, and who is in favor of free markets, because George W. Bush is the globalist, New World Order, semi-socialist neocon who is going to lead you down the primrose path of destruction, mayhem, more chaos, fewer rights, misery, and probably greater poverty. So if that isn't enough for you folks, it only gets worse as the time goes on. Just hold on, and you'll see. He also wonders where Billy or Franklin Graham was and why, this didn't really seem like Bush was sincere about his faith, having this United Methodist minister up there instead. He also is upset because Bush acknowledged the Koran as a legitimate book, and he mentioned the same sentences with the Bible. He says this is not forgivable. I agree. Bush really blew it on that as well, but no surprises here. I think he's just revealing his true character and nature. George W. Bush is not the friend of the believer. He's not the friend of the church. He's not our great savior president that's going to pull us out of the mire. He's going to make it worse, folks. You heard it right here on the Tyranny Response Network, and you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back after this break.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. You may reach us today by telephone at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Please also send us your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Remember, folks, the show is recorded and is available at policyofliberty.net's homepage every day around noon Eastern time, sometimes a little before, sometimes a little bit after, depending on how the recording and transfer process works out for us here at the station. But we encourage you to share that link with other people who can then listen online and hopefully send in some comments and questions to the show as a result of doing so. We already have listeners in many states: California, Oregon, Oklahoma, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Ohio. We've heard from many of these listeners, and we're happy to have you listening to the show on the recorded broadcast. Remember, if you're not listening between 7:30 and 9 in the morning, you are listening to the recorded broadcast, and we're glad that you are doing so, but you will not be able to call in, obviously, live during those times. We were hoping this week to have the webcast available. It doesn't look like that's going to occur this week, unfortunately. Perhaps this weekend we'll actually have the opportunity to get finalized and set up our webcast. And what a webcast means, folks, is that those of you who live outside of the Greenville, South Carolina area will be able to click a link on your computer, and it will live stream into your computer the broadcast here at the Tyranny Response Network. So you'll be able to listen all day to the Tyranny Response Network just by clicking on some link in your computer, and we will make that available as soon as possible. If it's not that by this weekend, shortly thereafter, we'll have that capability. That'll allow other people to participate all over the nation. They'll be able to participate, call into the show, and listen live from wherever they might be. Now, of course, that means those of you on the West Coast are going to really have to suffer a little bit to listen to the Tyranny Response Unit on the Tyranny Response Network, because 4:30 in the morning, I'm sure, comes very early for many of you out there, and to sit there huddled in front of your computer, it will show a great deal of dedication and would receive a great deal of admiration from me if you were able and willing to do so. Well, we have an email this morning from Steve. Actually, it's a two-part email, and I want to read this to the listeners and then make a few comments. Good email this morning, Steve, and we appreciate it. He says, I'm a born-again Christian. He says, Dr. Coben, I am a born-again Christian. I attended an American Christian school from kindergarten through the 12th grade. I am interested in your thoughts on the following personal statement. There are Christians in this nation as there are Christians in all the nations of the earth, but America is not a Christian nation. True, you're right, Steve. America had the righteous influence of Christians at its inception, but it was not a Christian nation. It was a constitutional republic. I agree. Today, America is no longer a constitutional republic, and as its people's government has forsaken God, removed his word from its schools, and murdered his creation in their mother's womb. These are neither the actions of a Christian nation nor a constitutional republic. Well, okay, I'm not sure that this one statement is right. Today is no longer a constitutional republic because its people's government has forsaken God. You don't need to have God in the mix in order to have a constitutional republic. There are plenty of constitutional republics out there, at least professed constitutional republics, at least in name, the way they're set up as constitutional republics, that operate as such without having strongly religious convictions on the part of peoples in the government. So I don't think that part holds true, but I do think that America is no longer the constitutional republic that it was set up to be according to the Constitution. If we have the Jeffersonian vision, or even the vision of John Adams, or even on the far left to somebody like Alexander Hamilton, they could not have possibly imagined the debauched and debased state that our nation had grown to as it is today. We are far more of a tyranny than we are of a representative government. We have come to the point where the Supreme Court and the executive use almost unilateral power to do anything they want and employ any sort of philosophy and afflict the nation with any sort of philosophy that comes through the academic corridors that they particularly like. They also have used their powers to rape the American people when it comes to the kind of money that is used. We don't have a constitutional gold and silver money anymore. Instead, what we have is fiat currency and run by this private banking corporation called the Federal Reserve System that's linked with the United States Treasury and apparently is owned by some large industrial or, excuse me, banking interests throughout the world, Rockefeller, Morgan, Rothschilds, and so forth. At least if we believe Ed Griffith, and I do, in Griffin, in The Creature from Jekyll Island. I think he makes a great case for what's really going on with the Federal Reserve. Well, it's not just the Federal Reserve. It's the whole scheme that's being imposed on the American people through the Internal Revenue Service. It's the myriad of regulations we face through the FCC, the FDA, and so many other bureaucrats. We have far worse now problems with bureaucracies, problems with the police state, than the Founding Fathers saw when they looked at King George. Our state has degenerated to something far less than what they'd imagined. So, Steve, I appreciate that comment, and I think you're right in general here, except for that one point. I think there's a mistake. But other than that, I have to agree 100%, and I appreciate the email. He continues in a second email to me, because I did respond, actually, to a couple comments that he made. And he said, "As Christians, our personal beliefs determine our personal convictions. I am very interested in your perspective on Paul's liberty and saying he had become all things to all men whereby he might win some. I think any true liberty God gives us is righteous by its very nature and remains in complete context with his words. Very interesting how these end times, our eschatology will also tend to determine our convictions. For example, I know of Christian pre-tribbers, that's those who hold to a pre-tribulational rapture, normally the dispensational variety, who are so convinced of that particular teaching that they will preach from the pulpit their intent to accept a subdermal microchip with a clear conscience." They will accept it? I know. Let me read that again, make sure I understand this, Steve. "I know of Christian pre-tribbers who are so convinced of that particular teaching that they will preach from the pulpit their intent to accept a subdermal microchip with a clear conscience. Yet I know other Christians who are appalled by the idea. So suffice it to say, those who live godly will suffer persecution one way or the other, so to speak." Well, I'm not exactly sure what that means, Steve, and what your point is here, because as far as I know, the pre-tribulation people I know would not be very happy about having this subdermal chip, and I don't know, apparently you know some who would. They would look at it as possibly part of the mark of the beast. But at any rate, having said that, you asked me about my perspective on Paul's liberty and saying he had become all things to all men where he might win some. I'm not exactly sure what that means there as well, except that I think there is a place in the Christian life to not only promote liberty and not only promote our own views of the state in a way that Jefferson did, even a revolutionary manner, but I also think it's of utmost importance that in what we do, we maintain our culture to the point that we don't sin, and hopefully be able to reach other people with the gospel, which I think is of great importance. We're up against a break now. This is the Tyranny Response Network, and that you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Thanks for the email, Steve.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace.
Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. You can reach us at 864-201-6955 this morning. That's 864-201-6955. We're glad you joined us this morning, and we are reading through some emails we've received from various listeners and glad to have received those emails. Thanks, and keep them coming in. Emails, our questions and comments can be sent by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. This email comes from Juliet, who writes to me, John, and I do like to be called John, by the way. You don't have to call me Dr. Coben, although if you really feel a compunction, you may, like some listeners apparently do. Except, as I said yesterday, if you work for the government, you must call me Dr. Coben, because you are a civil servant, and we have to put you into the right place, your right position. At any rate, John, this is the place where Christian children have the freedom to be light to the darkness of the government schools. Where is the blindness of Tony Beam's lack of understanding coming from? And he would have our children spend their days in such an atmosphere. She's mentioning another talk show host here in Greenville, South Carolina, Tony Beam, who's a neoconservative, also a columnist in the Times Examiner, has a column near mine. Very nice fellow. He does have a vision of the public school that is different than the tyranny response units. I'll have to say that much. I do not view the public school as a good institution. In fact, I think it is purely sin to send your kids there or to have any involvement with the public school whatsoever. It's just a diabolical institution that Satan uses in this way to destroy liberty, to destroy the minds of children, and to wreak havoc on the family. Tony did not have that perspective, and when you're writing in, you're giving us the context of listening to another local show, Juliet. But you're also forwarding me a letter that you wrote to Bill O'Reilly, another neoconservative at best, from the Fox News Network. And you wrote to him, Bill, the message of diversity, which we are a family, will be used to brainwash our children with using adorable puppets, is to accept various kinds of lifestyles and peoples, excluding none. Since you are sympathetic to the sodomite and deny God's word, which says sodomy is an abomination. Sodomy, by the way, for listeners that don't understand that term, is a biblical term. It's actually also a legal term in most law books, still in states today, for homosexuality. The practice of sodomy is equivalent to homosexuality. Sodomy is an abomination. You do not want to believe the true purpose of putting the video into 61,000 schools, 3-11-05, a system that has almost totally failed to teach our children even the basics. Would you have our children accept the pedophile, the prostitute, the Satanist, the adulteress, the druggies, the rappers who promote drugs, and those who fornicate with animals? The video encourages children to go to the website on which the pledge is found. Don't be a fool, Bill, and shame on you for your assessment of Dr. Dobson, a man much wiser than you, Juliet. Well, Juliet, I think you really shouldn't pull so many punches. I think you really shouldn't mince your words so well when you're talking to Bill O'Reilly, because the man might not understand how important this issue is to you. Actually, I'm kidding. That's a very very pointed and direct reply to this man who obviously is in favor, or at least not opposed to the homosexual movement, the militant homosexuals. Now, I'm not willing to allow the government to attack homosexuals because they're sinners. But I will say this, I am not interested in any way allowing homosexuals to have some sort of special rights or get into the state system, the government and power, and be able to impose their views on anybody else. Now, having said that, I also will add that the public school is the perfect place for homosexuals because it is a government school. It is guided by the secular humanist pagan philosophy that is so pervasive in the American Academy. And why wouldn't homosexuals be admitted into the public school or accepted there, or their lifestyles championed? It's no surprise to me, Juliet, that this goes on. It's just more evidence of why we need to abandon the public schools, hope they burn themselves to the ground, and hope that they completely begin to turn out more degenerates and misfits, so that those of us who can homeschool or can use a fine quality Christian school will become even brighter lights in a very dark and perverse generation. That's the solution, Juliet. Criticize the public school all you want, and people like Bill O'Reilly, and you should, because those things are evil and they're bad, and what's going on there is despicable. Nevertheless, it's just more evidence for us to say, look, we need to be departing from these institutions. Well, we yesterday had an opportunity to start reading an article written by Thomas DiLorenzo. Dr. DiLorenzo wrote The Real Lincoln, and I would strongly recommend that all listeners get a hold of this book, The Real Lincoln. And he wrote a couple articles in response to the president or President Bush's recent speeches, or recent inaugural speech, excuse me. And the name of this article, the title of this article, is The Greatest Presidential Reflection Since Lincoln. And we had he'd been talking about how the neocons have been all over this, thinking, oh, he's just like Lincoln, repudiating tyranny and helping us be free from slavery, like Lincoln freed the slaves, and so on and so forth. And DiLorenzo was giving us a little bit of a history lesson, quoting Lincoln, quoting the Republican Party of the 1860s, and saying the Republicans were in favor of slavery. Lincoln had no care for black people. The only reason the Emancipation Proclamation was issued in the middle of the war between the states was so Lincoln could gain some morale boost. Why else would people from Maine want to go kill people in Georgia? They didn't have television, no communication by phone. There wasn't any connection between the two that they would want to hate each other. They didn't even have a football team that played one against the other. And so here we find Lincoln needing to stir up strife as much as possible, or stir the pot up and gain some folks in terms of morale to go down and fight people in the South so he could gain his power and promote his lifestyle and his ways. So we're going to come back in just a quick second after we take a break and read some of the rest of this article, and perhaps some of you will have some comments on old Abe Lincoln, or maybe on what DiLorenzo has to say. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Back on the Tyranny Response Network, this is Christian Worldview with John Coben, talking about the amendments that were passed in the early 1860s regarding slavery. And then we're reading something from Thomas DiLorenzo's article in response, or he actually has a couple articles in response to the neocons' euphoria over Lincoln's inaugural address. If you'd like to call the show this morning, you can reach us at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Questions and comments by email may also be sent to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, they continued discussing these early amendments. This amendment passed the Northern-dominated House of Representatives on February 28, 1861. These are these so-called unratified amendment, the first 13th Amendment the 13th Amendment actually freed black people and others that would be from any kind of involuntary servitude. The amendment had passed the Northern-dominated House of Representatives on February 28, 1861, 2 days after the amendment passed the Senate. Lincoln pledged his support for it in his first inaugural address. He said, "I understand a proposed amendment to the Constitution has passed Congress to the effect that the federal government shall never interfere with the domestic institutions of the United States, including that of persons held in service. To avoid misconstruction of what I have said, I depart from my purpose not to speak in particular amendments so far as to say that, holding such a provision to now be implied constitutional law, I have no objection to it being made express and irrevocable." Coming from the President of the United States, this was a much stronger defense of slavery than was ever made by John C. Calhoun or any other Southerner. On the same day that the U.S. Senate passed the first 13th Amendment, what we just were talking about above, President James Buchanan signed into law the Morrill Tariff, which more than doubled the average tariff rate. The U.S. House of Representatives had passed a bill during the 1859-60 session, long before Lincoln's election or the secession of any southern state. It received the only one vote from a congressman from one of those states that would eventually secede, Tennessee. Lincoln was a protectionist for all of his political life. He owed his nomination to Pennsylvania protectionists. It told a Pittsburgh audience 2 weeks before his inaugural address that no issue, none, is more important to Congress than raising the tariff rate, and would further raise the tariff rate 10 times during his administration. He was also aware that the last time the Whigs, which by then had been politically morphed into Republicans, attempted to double the average tariff rates, South Carolinians nullified the tariff, refused to collect it, and forced President Andrew Jackson to compromise and lower the hated 1828 tariff of abominations. Lincoln, however, was not about to back down as Andrew Jackson did. On the issue of slavery, he was 100% accommodating, even going so far as to support the enshrinement of Southern slavery explicitly in the Constitution. But on the issue of the tax collection, he was 100% uncompromising. Pay up or die, he essentially told the South. Not in these exact words, of course, but in the weasel words of a skilled trial lawyer politician. Here's what he actually said. There needs to be no bloodshed nor violence, and there shall be none unless it be forced upon the national authority. And how might it be forced? Failure on the part of any state to collect the newly doubled tariff. That's how. After stating that he assumed the power to possess the property and places belonging to the government, he said he was also obligated to collect the duties and imposts, but beyond what would be necessary for these objects, there will be no invasion, no using of force against or among the people anywhere. The Confederates had offered to pay for any federal property on southern soil. Federal forts were there for their protection anyway, as well as their share of the federal debt. Lincoln refused to even discuss this with them. Fully 95% of all federal revenue came from tariffs in 1860, and with the southern states seceding, a large portion of that amount would go uncollected, the vast majority, as I understand. The seceding states were not about to send any checks to Washington, D.C. Fail to pay the newly doubled tariff tax, Lincoln said, and there will be an invasion. He would not back down for the South Carolina tax resisters, as Andrew Jackson did. 2 weeks after Fort Sumter, no one was wounded or killed, Lincoln announced a naval blockade on the southern ports and gave only one reason for it: tariff collection. This is the real reason, folks, and I'm not going to read the rest of the article here, but DiLorenzo is pointing out the real reason we had a tariff or the war between the states. The northern states aggressed the southern states under Lincoln's command and under the direction of this so-called Board of Governors, these seven industrialists who greatly influenced the northern public policy. They invaded the South in order to restore the tariff barrier that was there. The northerners had very poor or inefficient production methods, and the southerners could buy equipment from Europe far more cheaply, and would do so if there weren't the tariff there. And this made the northerners very upset. They wanted to force the South to buy from the North and therefore enrich the North. Remember, folks, if you didn't realize this, before 1860, the vast majority of wealth, wealthy people, and production in terms of on a global scale, was done in the South. It was cotton, it was tobacco, it was the things of agricultural production that made the nation great at that particular time. The North could not survive if the South would not buy from them, because they just didn't have the efficient production methods that were available in Europe. And so the entire war primarily was a war over economics, a war about the tariff. And later on, slavery came in during the Emancipation Proclamation after 1863, in the beginning of 1863, in order to boost the morale of people that didn't have really the heart to go down and attack people in the South. There was so much sympathy in the North for the Southern secession movement and for their rights being violated that has gone basically buried by those who have rewritten history, it's just a crying shame. If you read DiLorenzo's book, The Real Lincoln, you will find out much of the truth of what Lincoln did. including imprisoning Maryland's legislature when they tried to secede, or driving the entire legitimate government and state legislature of Missouri when they tried to secede, driving them down to Marshall, Texas, and installing instead a puppet government of Lincoln. When you read about after the war how Lincoln installed puppet governments everywhere, that he removed the legitimate governors elected by the peoples, he removed senators and judges, and put in his own people through military appointments, essentially. These people became the governors of the states in the South as soon as they were crushed by Lincoln, even though Lincoln said they were going to be restored to their original footing under the Constitution. Lincoln violated the Constitution in so many ways and suppressed people in so many ways that it's bewildering to think of. Only when we put him in the light of such other cruel thugs in the history of the world like Stalin and Hitler do we begin to have an understanding of just how evil this man was. And this article by DiLorenzo is pointing out the absolute appalling hypocrisy of the neoconservatives to laud Lincoln as anything but a tyrant. To actually believe that George Bush is promoting liberty is appalling. He's taking away our rights. He's giving us greater government. He's putting on this phony war in Iraq. He's paying off his political friends through whatever it might be, the oil scheme. I don't know. He's not doing what he's doing because he wants to help people, or he's a humanitarian, or wants to restore true political freedom. If he had any interest in those things, he would go to a poorer country like the Sudan and go ahead and do it too. But he's there in the Middle East because the Middle East is what it is. It has some resources that we want, and it's a very strategic location for Bush and for his pals to seize in the New World Order. At any rate, don't be duped by these neoconservatives. They are not telling the truth about Lincoln or about Bush. Abraham Lincoln was a diabolical scoundrel, probably the worst president the United States has ever had, and certainly the most disastrous, because he absolutely undermined liberty and took away the freedoms which we so, which our founding fathers shed their blood to preserve for us as their posterity, including those who immigrated and those who would want to just come to America to be free. Didn't have to be of the bloodline of those founders, but all those who would eventually come here. So let's become re-educated about Abraham Lincoln, folks. Let's not be deceived by him, by the historians who write about him in the revisionist manner. And let's not be duped, folks, by George W. Bush. He's not your friend. He's a tyrant. He's someone who's going to do as Lincoln, the evil Lincoln, not as the good Lincoln, in degenerating the liberties that you have, taking away your rights, bringing in bigger government, higher taxes, and no virtue whatsoever, even though he'll give lip service to all of those things. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government,
free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into the last segment of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. You can reach us by phone today at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. And 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can send your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net, that by email at questions@policyofliberty.net, and we would be glad to hear from you. We've been talking about Lincoln a little bit today, especially because the neocons are in a euphoria and hyped up about George W. Bush, their recent savior, that they're going to go out of their way to link Lincoln to George Bush. Well, on the one hand, I think it is appalling that they do so because they are promoting a Lincoln which is a mythical Lincoln, a Lincoln who freed the slaves, who cared about slaves, and who was there because he loved liberty and as a wise, prudent father worked what he could to preserve the Union. The fact of the matter is that Lincoln was a diabolical tyrant, a man who could care less about blacks or slavery whatsoever, actually was thinking more about getting rid of black people by shipping them off to an island or back to Africa. The man not only didn't care about the slaves, his primary motivation was to please economic interests, those who wanted to support the tariff barrier in order to pad their pockets with more power through government intervention. The Lincoln of the past that people don't realize is a Lincoln who is a leftist, who loves the central bank, who had been, since a junior congressman from Illinois, in favor of the central banking regime and opposed to Andrew Jackson's stalwart policies against central banking regimes. So Abraham Lincoln was the liberal's liberal. He was in the Hamiltonian Clay line, the next stage of liberal development in our nation, and the destruction of liberty, the destruction of those things that the founding fathers would have held dear. And some people have realized this, others have not. Unfortunately, the neoconservatives have not quite figured out what Lincoln was all about yet, and have tried to cast Lincoln into this anti-tyrant mold, that he was really not tyrannical, that he was opposed to tyranny, he was opposed to slavery, and now George W. Bush would be the same way. Folks, and nothing could be further from the truth, but we will have to agree to some extent that George W. Bush has adopted the features of the real Lincoln by promoting the Patriot Act, by promoting phony wars, by promoting his own political power, and by using the Bible on his lips or different moral issues in order to sway gullible Christian voters to go ahead and take a stand with him and actually get him reelected. He has done that much as far as being like Lincoln, the true Lincoln, that is, but he so far has not been nearly as diabolical. I don't think it'd be hard to match the evil that Lincoln afflicted the United States with, and George W. Bush has not gone quite that far. He's just much more of a self-serving, shifty politician than anything else. Well, Thomas DiLorenzo has written some tremendous articles. He is a scholar, a PhD in economics, as I understand it, and he has been doing a lot of historical or economic history research about Lincoln. Recently wrote a book called The Real Lincoln, which I'd encourage all of you to get a copy of and to read. When Lincoln gave his inaugural address, people in the neoconservative movement were, like Bill Kristol, for instance, were just, you know, in awe and amazement of their wonderful leader that they had put in had been so much like Lincoln, and that they were going to expect such great things out of this man G.W. Bush. Well, he wrote a couple of articles trying to revise the revisionist history, put some things in correct perspective, so that people would really see what George Bush is all about. And another article he wrote, called Spooner's Fiery Attack on Lincolnite Hypocrisy, he actually draws upon a contemporary of Lincoln, the one who truly loved liberty and the vision of the founders, who criticized Lincoln's actions back then and proved them and showed what they really were in light of history, in light of philosophy and moral philosophy and the whole movement for liberty. He says in an earlier article, and this is what the article says by DiLorenzo, in an earlier article entitled Abolitionist Defends the South, I described how the famous Massachusetts abolitionist Lysander Spooner excoriated the Lincoln regime for destroying the voluntary union of the founders, waging an unnecessary war, and above all else, failing to end slavery peacefully as all other nations where slavery existed in the 19th century had done. Spooner said these things in his 1870 essay, No Treason. I recently discovered, however, that his criticisms of the Lincoln regime were even harsher at the beginning of the war. The great libertarian icon was a fierce and steadfast opponent of Lincoln and the Republican Party cabal from the very beginning. If one only searches through the collected papers of Spooner, one will find a January 22, 1860 letter to William Seward, who was to become Lincoln's Secretary of State and enforcer of the secret police force that would imprison tens of thousands of northern political dissenters once habeas corpus was legally suspended. Like other Republicans, Seward had spent the previous decade bloviating about what a great champion of liberty he was. But Spooner saw through his transparent political rhetoric. Actions speak louder than words, and Spooner understood that the actions of Seward, Lincoln, and the rest blatantly belied their sweet-sounding odes to liberty. Think about George W. Bush here, folks. All those odes to liberty that he's given, all that talk about virtue and morality, all the rhetoric he's put out to the Christian right about being against abortion. What has he really done, folks? Think about it. Don't be fooled. You've been fooled once if you voted for him. Don't be fooled again. Call a spade a spade. DiLorenzo continues, Spooner's letter to Seward starts out with a fireball of a sentence. Speaking of evidence of your Seward's unfaithfulness to freedom and a pledge to embarrass the plans of the Chases, the Sumners, and the Wilsons, and the Hales, and other Jesuitical leaders in the Republican Party who profess that they can aid liberty without injuring slavery. Spooner's use of the word Jesuitical is telling. It means crafty and equivocating. At this point in time, the U.S. House of Representatives was about to pass a proposed constitutional amendment prohibiting the federal government from ever intervening with Southern slavery. This first 13th Amendment eventually passed both the House and the Senate, dominated by the Republicans, and Lincoln himself pledged his support for it in his first inaugural address. Despite all the anti-slavery rhetoric by Lincoln, Seward and others, these actions proved that these men were all quite diabolical liars, connivers, and political manipulators. He excoriated them for believing that they could ride into power on two horses of liberty and slavery. In his letter, he literally called Seward and all the rest of the Republican cabal double-faced demagogues. Spooner was the author of a brilliant 1845 book, The Unconstitutionality of Slavery, which had never been refuted. He reminded Seward of this, going so far as to point out what Senator Brown of Mississippi had publicly admitted Spooner's arguments to be irrefutable, whereas he, Seward, a supposed champion of liberty, had not. This is an open advocate of slavery from Mississippi virtually makes more concessions to the anti-slavery character of the Constitution than a professed advocate of liberty from New York. Spooner closed his letter to Seward by saying that he intended to make their correspondence public, despite Seward's wishes, so that it may possibly serve as a purpose towards defeating yourself and the Republicans, upon which time I shall be gratified. 2 years and thousands of war-related deaths later, Spooner focused his ire on another Republican Party luminary, Senator Charles Sumner of Massachusetts, who is known to have admitted that in public that Spooner's argument for the unconstitutionality of slavery was irrefutable. Why, then, in heaven's name, do you not take that position? He boomed in a letter to Sumner. As with Lincoln, Seward, and others, Sumner only opposed slavery in the abstract, not in reality and not practically. Consequently, wrote Spooner, while for a dozen years you have been making the most bombastic pretensions of zeal for freedom, you have really been all that time a deliberately perjured traitor to the Constitution, to liberty, and to truth. And he then accused Sumner of treason to the Constitution. Spooner strongly believed that had the case been publicly made that slavery was unconstitutional, then world opinion would have pressured honorable Southern leaders like Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, and to work towards doing what the British, Spanish, Dutch, French, and other slave-owning societies had done in the 19th century, and end the institution peacefully. And he'll continue on to discuss the libertarian movement towards the abolition of slavery. Folks, Lincoln was not the champion of the slave. He's become that by revisionist history. What Lincoln really was a crafty, subtle, slimy, nasty, evil politician who inflicted death, mayhem, poverty, and the destruction of liberty on this nation. And George W. Bush may not be that bad. It's pretty hard to be as bad as Lincoln. But he's certainly in the same character mold as Lincoln, and it was going to lead to the degeneration of our society. Let's not be misled. We're coming up against a little break again, folks. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be right back.
Warning. Dr. Coburn's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coburn with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
And we're hoping that you'll be having a day made with all sorts of new thoughts about liberty, about how Christians should be thinking about the world, the relation to the state, and about the nature of the state itself. How many of you or how many of us had been fooled in our formative years into believing that Abraham Lincoln was anything other than a traitor, anything other than someone who hated liberty and he could care less about slaves, and anything, well, the Lincoln myth is so pervasive. It's so subtle and sad, so pervasive, and from our youths, we have been deceived into believing falsehood about this man and about the destruction of our great nation that was inflicted because of at his hand and according to his work. I will have to say that it wasn't only Lincoln. He had the help of not only this man we read about, Seward, but also Edwin Stanton, for 2 years was his Secretary of War. If there's anybody in history that was, in American history that has been more evil than Abraham Lincoln, it would be this Stanton fellow. If you just read his biography, it's telling enough about the man's character. Not only was he a liar and shifty, but he was someone who would go all out to promote the agenda of the left and the destruction of the Constitution, all in the name of preserving the Union, as if he almost fantastically believed that preserving the Union by denying the doctrine of Jefferson and denying the rights of people and that they were guaranteed under the Constitution according to the writ of, especially the writ of habeas corpus, that somehow he was doing an American thing. As a matter of fact, those two men did just the opposite. Some people aren't aware that Lincoln was able to successfully put a 10th member on the Supreme Court during the 1861 to 1864 era. The Supreme Court, even though the Southern judges left and resigned, the Supreme Court was not going along with what Lincoln was doing. They had threatened him with impeachment. Lincoln threatened to kill them. And when that got to loggerheads and there wasn't that much budging, Lincoln just went to his pals in Congress. I remember the Congress had been the Southern Senate seats had been vacated, and they readily passed for Lincoln a 10th person on the court. How in the world they can do this? Well, it's not constitutional, but it happened. In the same way that just think of all the other things that went on that weren't constitutional. Not only the blockading of ports and using the military to promote the business interests of the North, but how in the world did Virginia get divided? I mean, in 1863, Virginia was divided by the Northern government. Virginia had seceded from the Union, and the North said they didn't recognize this secession. They were just in rebellion. And went ahead and let the western counties of Virginia secede and become a new state. Well, folks, if you read the Constitution, in order for a state to come out of another state, there has to be a vote by the state legislature, and a number of other things have to occur in order for that to happen. It just didn't happen that way. Lincoln carved out a piece of this state and made it a new state on his as on his own volition. There wasn't any constitutional procedure followed. There were so many other things that were violated there, folks, that were in terms of our liberties, in terms of constitutional rights and the founding vision of America, that it requires volumes. And indeed, I believe there are still 60 new books about Abraham Lincoln or about the War of Northern Aggression published every year. The lie is so pervasive, and when people find out, they are so angry by how we've been deluded and misled by our public school training that they go out and write books and try to inform other people. The information's out there, folks. There's nothing really hidden. There is no other side of the story. There is no balanced view. There is no shellacking over what Lincoln did and what his cronies did. It's all there for you to read. It's only a matter of whether or not we're going to believe, continue to stick our head in the sand and believe the lies we've been taught through the public school about this man, or even the so-called Christian schools about this man, or whether we're going to go out and become informed and find out what indeed happened. Once you find out what Lincoln did, you'll find out, you'll be taking the first step towards reforming your own life and view so that you can see what needs to happen for us to, again, regain liberty in our great nation. Well, we've come here to, again, in the last segment of the show, to a time where we can begin to discuss a little bit about some of the questions that we've posted for you at policyofliberty.net. If you go to the homepage of policyofliberty.net, you'll find two PDF files that can be read by your Adobe Acrobat reader. Down at the bottom of policyofliberty.net, one is simply called Deep Questions for Dr. Coben's Radio Show. These are 17 questions that we'll be reading one or so shortly that you can look at anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Think about, copy and paste it into your text editor or into your email editor, and make some comments and send them to the show to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And we can discuss these things on the air. They are important, deep issues of the day for Christian-thinking people. We find so many Christians are gullible. We witness the fact that so many of them voted for George Bush alone. That gives testimony enough to it. But people have become gullible, and they've not been able to adequately engage their minds to think about in terms of liberty, to think in a way which would promote free markets and promote their own faith. Well, at any rate, you can take a look at those questions, and we'll be reading a couple of them here shortly just to tantalize you a little bit, maybe even discussing them a little bit. I'd also welcome you to go there and take the quiz on policyofliberty.net that helps you determine which perspective of public policy seems right to you. There are four historical evangelical views of public policy. Perhaps you can't find them quite as well embellished or detailed as you find in the quiz or some of the things I write, but throughout history you'll find either seminally or in one form or another, each of these views expressed in the different denominations, the different peoples of the world, in America and in England and Europe especially. Well, at any rate, if you go there, you will take that self-guided 15-question quiz. We'd encourage you to do so. I think it'll be a great help to you. And when you get the response or when you find out the results, if you could just email those to us and let us know, we'd sure appreciate that. It's an encouragement to us to know that people are listening and taking advantage of the things that we create. But also it makes great discussion for those of us who want to think about these deep issues of public policy in terms of the Christian worldview. Your comments and questions are, as always, welcome. You can call the show at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Just a quick reminder, usually we meet at California Dreaming on Fridays for lunch. However, that is not going to be occurring today. We have a change of plans, and if any of you were thinking of coming out to the California Dreaming restaurant today for lunch, it's been canceled for today, and next week will be the next time that will occur. So I apologize for any of you who have made plans to come out. We will not be able to be out there today in Greenville. When we come back, we'll read a couple of these questions for the closing of the show. You're listening on the Tyranny Response Network to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Welcome back to the show. We've been talking about some of these great questions that you'll find in the PDF file, and now we're going to read a few of them. We've been reading question number one regarding self-defense on several occasions, and I'm going to go ahead and read it once again without comment. Well, hopefully not much comment, just because my wife and I were up late at night talking in bed again whether or not Christians were during the American Revolution were in sin by revolting against the king. And it all boils down to a matter of self-defense. Do we look at the state as a criminal that we can defend ourselves against, or do we look at the state as something that we can displace whenever it does not uphold God's law and righteousness? Whatever view of public policy we have is going to influence our answer. And the vast there were great numbers of Christians during the American War for Independence, as well as in the South, who fought against government, who revolted, rebelled, disobeyed, and so forth, because they believed they were doing something of a higher calling. They were obeying God instead of men. They were being righteous in their dealings. Well, question number one on our sheet that you can find online, policyofliberty.net, and the deep questions for the radio show is the following. Do Christians have the right of self-defense? If so, under what circumstances? Against criminals or also against governments? Are there any instances in which Christians must not defend themselves? What biblical passages can be used to support the doctrine? See Luke 3:14, 14:31, 22:36, and 1 Timothy 5:8 for some texts. Why did Christ and the apostles defend themselves against the Roman state, or why didn't they? Were they just being pragmatic or expedient? Which of the following may be properly resisted with force, even deadly force, by Christians? 1. An angry Christian brother attacking you with a knife. 2. An armed robber or other predator who enters your home in the middle of the night. 3. The local mafia organization that wants to shake you down for monthly contributions. 4. A criminal in public, for example, as you pass by a small group of thugs who are gang-raping a woman outside of a bar, they turn their attention towards you in a menacing way. Number 5. The invading army of another nation. Number 6, the invading army of a nation that your people just declared their independence from, but they refuse to acknowledge your independence from them. And 7, your own state, which is extorting money from you legally and in other ways, has become a predator, maybe even violating God's law. What are your responses to those questions? Why don't you go to the website, copy down the question, and make some responses in email, and we'll go ahead and discuss them on the show live. Question number 2 says, may a government legalize crime or actions that God says are wicked? What does the Bible mean when it says that states are ordained by God, as it does in Romans 13:1, for instance? If a government does wrong, when and to what extent, passively or actively, may Christians oppose it? Were Lincoln and FDR criminals? I may have tipped my hand to that one. Who or what defines what is a criminal? Question number 3 says this. How would the statements by the apostles Paul and Peter in Romans 13, Titus 3, and 1 Peter 2 have differed if it had been modern-day Americans rather than under the Roman state? Why is the study of history, economics, political science, world religion, and philosophy important for proper biblical interpretation? I'd like to stop and just comment on a couple of these things. We have 5 minutes left in the show. Again, you're welcome to call in to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Be happy to have your calls and discuss these issues on the air. Some of these things are deeper questions that might not be conducive to a phone call, though, and that's why I mentioned go ahead and copy them into your text editor and send them by email to the show, questions@policyofliberty.net. We'd love to discuss these things with you. Well, I think that the issue of culture is an extremely important one, and this question 3 that I just read really brings to light just how important it is. Because, for one thing, it would be okay for us to condemn all the Americans who have fought in wars against government, against King George or against Lincoln, and say they were just sinning. If we could just really prove that that is indeed the case in the Scripture, we have to just obey. They didn't obey. They revolted. They had no real reason to revolt. God tells them to be content, even if they're enslaved in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and therefore they were just wrong. That's one way to view things, that any kind of rebellion is always sinful and wrong. Another way to look at it is the culture with some cultural interpretation and saying, look, Paul and Peter wrote to Christians who had no political power. They had no power of arms and could in no way withstand the Roman army. The Roman army was powerful. It had a road system that allowed it to move quickly from province to province. And they were notorious for ruthlessly putting down any kind of uprising. And given that there was no chance for revolt to succeed, one might say the comments that they made were principles that applied specifically for that day. Now, how far we take that comment is a matter of debate because, you know, there are clearly things like, as I've mentioned before, the holy kiss requirement in Scripture where we're commanded to greet each other with a holy kiss that can be said to be cultural, that, well, it is not required of Americans or other people in other nations today because it just referred to the practice and custom of people of that day. Well, you might also make a case that the culture has an influence here in Romans 13 and these other passages, and we aren't saying so arbitrarily, and the reason for that is the system of government that is available to us in the United States, our state, as it were, is completely distinct, different, and of different character than the Roman Empire's state was. Theirs was totalitarian. It was not tolerant of other religions. It was cruel in favor of infanticide, suicide, and its philosophy was very pagan. Our system started with the idea that there is no king other than God, perhaps, or at best, or at least the Constitution is the ruling and reigning document whereby all of the things are to be adjudicated, judged, and set up. People have rights before the state comes into existence or antecedent to the state, and states or governments are set up and employed among men just to serve the people, to help protect their rights. For many of the American founders, there was no king but King Jesus, period. And they did not accept the idea that the Romans would have accepted that Caesar is God and that the Roman state was indeed all-powerful and nothing else could be done without its permission. Rights came from the Roman state. People did not have rights inalienably or intrinsically, and life was very different. Well, given that the government systems are different, there is obviously a cultural difference. So do we apply Romans 13 that talks about kings or Caesars and directly state that, well, George Bush is now our king? Well, the Congress is now our king. These things are not true. They are not kings, at least not according to the Constitution. And if the Constitution is king, we may have a very different way to interpret, as Americans at least, those particular passages. So how would the statements differ if they were modern-day Americans rather than under the Roman state? I think they would have differed dramatically. I think we would have seen the Apostle Paul opposing the welfare state, opposing all proactive policy, condemning it, telling Christians to not participate in receiving stolen funds. I think that those things didn't exist then, and that's why Paul didn't talk about them. The same way Jesus doesn't talk about guns, he only talks about swords. They couch the language in the culture according to the culture of the day, and that is indeed what Paul and Peter are doing when they talk about the state. The state was different then than it is now, and I think we would have seen dramatically different remarks from Paul and Peter had they been Americans living under our particular system, which is quite anomalous in the history of the world. Well, we're coming up to the end of the show here, and we're glad that you've listened today. I'd just like to encourage you to think about history and economics, political science, and these other things, and how they might, these other disciplines, how they might actually affect our interpretation of the Bible, because I think they are important, they are crucial. And we do have a severe cultural difference between what the Romans Christians experienced and our experience here in the United States of America in the 20th century. Glad you joined us today. This is the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll see you again on Monday morning. God bless.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview.
with Dr. John Coben.